Straight Life, The Story of Art Pepper. Some small parts of the story of Straight Life are told by people other than Art Pepper, his relatives and his friends. The first of these is Sarah Schechter Bartold. Sarah is the aunt who raised Art's mother for a while when she was a little girl. My husband was born in Italy. I think he said he had four sisters, but maybe there were three. Two were living when I went there many years ago. I couldn't say a word. They brought a chair outside. They didn't invite me in. They were country people, very suspicious. My husband went to study for the priesthood when he was a young man, but he didn't like the things he saw going on there. He came to this country, and he was a waiter. He also worked in the coal mines. When I met him, he was an insurance man. We met back east. I worked daytimes, and then I went with him to all his prospects at night. But I actually never got, out of 58 years with him, more than he told me. And what difference does it make? I don't remember anything about Ida. She was 7 or 8 when she came to us. She was pretty, but she was a terrible little troublemaker right from the beginning. She was a liar, a little liar. But I really don't remember why she was sent to live with us. Maybe they felt that she would do better in America. As far as I knew, she was one of my husband's sister's children. She was a little liar, and that's the whole story. A child who fibs can do an awful lot of damage, especially when you have little children of your own. She lied about all sorts of things about the other children. This one did that. And they were younger than she was, so I thought it best not to have her around. But why stir up the past and cause her son to have hard feelings about her? She was his mother. Was he her only child? Did he inherit anything when she died? She had nothing to leave? I remember her mostly as a terrible fibber. The next narrator is Thelma Winters Noble Pepper. She was married into the Pepper family before Art was born. She was married to a man named Shorty. After they were divorced, she married Art's father and became Art's stepmother, whom he loved very, very much. She refers to Art's father throughout, affectionately, as Daddy. Here she talks about Art's grandmother, Grandma. Arthur Sr., Daddy, was born in Galena, Kansas, and then I think they went to this Missouri mining town. Grandma's first husband worked in the lead mine, and it was a real sad thing there because her husband, I think his name was Sam Pepper, was a periodic drunkard. Every weekend when he got paid, he'd go to the saloon and cash his check. And then, usually, there was nothing left. So this one time, they were visiting Sam's sister's family, and this sister's husband and Sam, they both got drunk. And the sister called the police, who took them both to jail, and I think they must have given him a 30-day sentence. And while he was in jail, the place where Grandma lived, they evicted her. She had 4 or 5 children at that time. One had just died, and there wasn't no place for her to go. So they sent her to the poor farm, she and the children. And she was expecting then. She was carrying her twins. They told her You know you can't keep your children here. They'll have to be put up for adoption. She said no way was she going to let her children be put up for adoption. So she went back to where they had been living. She knew an old man that had a run-down old chicken house. She asked him if she could move in there, and he told her if she thought she could make that livable, she could have it. And she did. When Sam come out of jail, he didn't look for her. He just stayed away. He just decided to beat it. So that ended that. And that was 2 months before her twins was born. This all gives you an idea of why Grandma was like she was. The twins was only 3 weeks old when she went to work. She and her sister-in-law took in washing together. And the boys, the sister had a boy about Daddy's age, they'd deliver and pick up. I guess this was in 1895. Daddy would have been about 9 years old. When the twins was 15 months old, they got, at that time they called it membranous croup. But now we know that it was diphtheria. So one of them died, and they took him away to be buried. And then the second one got so sick it couldn't breathe. So she'd walk it day and night. 15 days apart they died. And this last one, Grandma was so wore out with taking care of them for so long, the neighbors induced her to lay down and take a nap. She washed the dead baby and dressed him and put him on a pillow on her sewing machine. While she was asleep, the authorities came in and took the baby, didn't even wake her up, and that affected her tremendously. When she was here with me and Daddy, dying, she lived that again. One day I heard her crying, and I went in there. She was crying just fit to break her heart, and she said, "Oh, why didn't they wake me? Why did they take him away without waking me?" She didn't even get to attend the funeral of that second baby. After that, I think she ran a kind of boarding house for minors. At that time, women couldn't get jobs like they can now. Joe Noble was one of the boarders. Then when Joe started a butcher shop, she helped him in the butcher shop. They decided to get married, and that's when Joe come out here to California. They were married in 1913. Daddy didn't live with them. When he was growing up, he spent most of his time on his uncle's ranch back in the Middle West somewhere. Daddy never went to school beyond the fifth grade. Then he went to work. I think he was 17 when he joined the Merchant Marine. I don't know when it was that he lost his eye. Every once in a while, he got tired of being at sea, and he'd take a stateside job. He was working on a bean huller, and he got a bean hull in his eye. That put it out. You couldn't tell it on him. He was the handsomest man I ever saw. I knew him for years before I knew that eye was no good. Well, Daddy's stepfather just tolerated him. They didn't have no open quarrels that I know of. When Daddy'd come to port, San Pedro, he'd go to see them, but he never stayed overnight. His home port was San Francisco, so he'd come down here to see his mother and say hello and goodbye. He loved his mother very devotedly, but she didn't care too much for him because she hated anybody who drank to excess, and Daddy always drank to excess. Dick was her favorite. He didn't drink at all.
And when her other children died, he was the baby.
But anyhow, Dick was a very affectionate, loving person, see? And Daddy wasn't. Daddy was kind of standoffish like her. Well, Daddy thought when he supported her and took care of her, that showed his love. He didn't do a lot of talking. That was the way it was. And I know when she died, oh my, he'd sit in that chair there and cry like a baby. He says, "Why couldn't she tell me she loved me?
Just once.
Why couldn't she tell me she loved me?" All three of them, there was Grandma and Daddy and Junior. They didn't communicate with each other. Thelma continues the tale of the Pepper family. Here, she talks about Millie, Art's mother.
I was married to Shorty Noble. That was Daddy's stepbrother in 1920. Johnny was born in October of 1921. And it was March of the following year that I first saw Daddy. He'd just come by for a few minutes, said hello to Grandma, and was gone. And the next time he came in port, my second baby, Buddy, was about 6 months old. So that was 2.5 years later. He'd come up to see Grandma again, but this time he brought Millie. That would be 1924, when they got married. Well, Millie fell in love with my Buddy. He was one of those pink and white babies, all soft and cuddly, you know. She wanted a baby. She didn't figure on Junior being sickly and hard to take care of. Millie said she was born back east in New Jersey or New York, and her uncle and his wife, the Bartolds, brought her to California when she was just a little girl. Her real name was Ida. She didn't know her last name. She'd got a lot of sisters and brothers somewhere. Well, they made a regular little doll of her. Her slightest wish, they got it for her, until they had kids of their own, and then her name was Mud. Her aunt wasn't very good to her after she had children of her own. She'd accuse Millie of doing something, and if she said she didn't do it, she wasn't allowed nothing to eat until she admitted she did it. Millie said she went 3 days one time without anything to eat because she knew she hadn't done what she was accused of, but she finally told her aunt she did just to get out from under. Then she ran away from home. She ran away a lot of times, and that's why I think the Bartolds finally put her in a convent school. But she ran away from there, too. For a while, she was put in a foster home. She was very happy there. But then she met this woman, Mildred Baird. Millie must have been about 14 then. This woman wanted Millie to go with her to one of the Harvey houses out in the desert. I think it was Barstow. And be a waitress. I don't know what kind of experience she had out there, but she ran away from there too, and she went down to Pedro to be a waitress. She was looking for the employment office, and she stopped Daddy on the street to ask him where it was, and he said he'd take her there. He did, but the next day he got her a job with somebody he knew that ran a restaurant, because he was very well known in Pedro. So let's see. The first day she met Daddy. The second, he got her a job. And then he asked her how old she was. When she told him she was 15, she said he got as white as a sheet. The next day they went up to Los Angeles and got married at some Bible college. She gave her name as Mildred Baird on the marriage license. And then he brought her home to Grandma. Daddy thought that if Millie could stay with Grandma while he was sailing, at that time he was sailing between Pedro and Seattle on a lumber boat, but she didn't get along very good. She was a nice, friendly girl, you know. Italians usually are, and the family wasn't very nice to her, the Noble family. They were very clannish, and they didn't seem to take to her too good. She didn't know what to do with her time, and I think she did things she shouldn't have. Anyhow, after a couple of trips, Daddy decided that that wouldn't do. He'd have to come stateside. That's when he went to work in a machine shop. I was living in Watts then, and I kind of lost track of him until Junior was born. Oh my, poor little thing. He had rickets and yellow jaundice when he was born, and he was so skinny that his hands and his feet looked like bird claws. When he was 3 or 4 months old, couldn't get nothing to agree with him. I don't know if she couldn't or if she didn't want to, but Junior was a bottle baby. I don't imagine she had any milk anyway. She didn't eat right. Junior couldn't assimilate cow's milk. They had him to half a dozen different doctors, and they all told him the same thing. He can't live. They took him to Children's Hospital in L.A., and the doctors gave them a formula for barley gruel. It had to be cooked all day, and in that she put caro syrup and so much dextromaltose, and that agreed with him, but he was still awfully skinny. And they couldn't bathe him in water, he was too weak.
The doctor told them that if they bathed him in olive oil, that would nourish him too. He looked like death warmed over. Daddy and Millie had lots of fights about Junior not being Daddy's. He was sailing when she got pregnant, and Junior would have either had to be 2 weeks early or 2 to 3 weeks late. And so this Betty Ward, a friend of Millie's, smart aleck woman that she was there when Junior was born, and she said to the doctor, "Is he a full-term baby?" The doctor said yes. He came right on time. So there was that question. But in time, Daddy realized that Junior had to be his. There were too many features the same. You know them turned-up toes that Junior has? And Daddy's arms are shaped, were shaped here, just exactly like Junior's. But Millie was unfaithful. Might as well say it. I remember when me and Shorty lived in the big house, and she and Daddy lived in the back. Daddy worked swing shift, and she'd go out, and she asked me to listen for Junior in case he woke up. She got home one night just by the skin of her teeth, just soon enough to get her clothes off and jump in bed before Daddy got home. This Betty Ward had several children, and they were all mean as could be to Junior. They were all older than he, and they would tease him just to hear him holler, because he'd make a real big commotion when he was upset about anything. They're the ones that got him afraid of food touching on a plate. Millie and Betty would go tomcatting somewhere and leave him with these kids. There'd be plenty of food for the kids, but when it came time to eat, they wouldn't let Junior have any. And when they'd finally decide to give him something to eat, they'd put it on his plate so that the food would touch each other. And then they'd tell him, better not eat it, that it'd poison him. First time I realized that was one time when Millie and Daddy were separated. He came by with Junior just at mealtime, and I set Junior a place, not knowing how he was. I just fixed his plate like I did for my kids. And he set up such a yowl. He says, "You hate me. You want me to die." And I couldn't figure out what was the matter with him. And he says, "Well, the food is touching. That'll poison me. I'll die." And he wouldn't eat nothing either. Daddy's nickname for Millie was Peaches because her complexion was so perfect. She never had to wear makeup. She was a very pretty girl, but she got heavy as soon as she got married. Millie never cared too much for women, but she loved me. We were closer than most sisters. When we were neighbors, Millie'd bring Junior over to me every day. She'd get all her housework done up, her house nice and clean, and then she'd bring Junior over to me and go out tomcatting and come over and get him just before time to go for Daddy. One time, Junior told me, I guess he'd been having a hard time one way or another, "I sure wish you was my mother." That sure made me proud, I'll tell you. Later on, Daddy got a job on the tuna fishing boats. One time, they were reported lost at sea, and they were gone for 40 days. They had got becalmed on the ocean out there somewhere. Usually, they'd be gone for 2 weeks, come back for a few days, and go out again. And Millie would leave Junior out in the cold, no supervision, nothing to eat. Daddy came home and found that one time. The landlady lived in the front house, and they lived in the back. So after that, he made arrangements with her that Junior was to come to her house after school. But I don't think Daddy made many trips after that. Millie and Daddy separated half a dozen times. It was on again, off again. She'd leave every whip stitch. Then, when she found the going too rough, why, she'd come back. And Daddy always took her back because, he said, to his way of thinking, a child needed its mother. That was a strong point with him. Even though he got to the point where he actually disliked her intensely,
Still, he thought that she would be better for Junior than somebody else. There was one time when Daddy and Millie separated. I think Junior was only about 9 or 10 months old. Oh, well, she left him before that. She left him when Junior was only a few months old. She left the baby with Irma, Dick's wife, and she went home to her aunt, Mrs. Bartold. And the aunt promptly brought her home to Arthur the next day. That's when this business came out that we never heard of before. The aunt gave Daddy a real dressing down. She told him, when you married Ida, that's what she called her, when you married Ida, you assumed responsibility for her because she was a ward of the court before that. So no matter what she does, she is your responsibility until she's 21 years old. Daddy knew he was licked. And Daddy and Junior lived with Grandpa Joe and Grandma in Watts. Grandma took care of him then, and that's when he made the most progress physically, because he didn't have this upheaval all the time. He was just a little fellow then. He ate regular and had regular hours, and he was a pretty happy baby. Millie'd come to see him once in a while, but Daddy forbid her to take him anyplace. Then, after 9 months, they got back together again. They finally broke up once and for all when Junior was 7. And that's when he went to live with his grandmother permanently. At that time, Grandma had a chicken ranch over here in Nuevo. Grandpa Joe had died, and she had her brother helping her out there. She had traded her house for the ranch. Then she couldn't make the payments on it, so she traded her interest in the ranch for a house on 83rd Street in Watts. Sandy was the man that Millie was going with while Daddy was off fishing, while they were still married, and he didn't like Junior at all. But she went to live with him after she and Daddy separated for good. She used to tell me all kinds of things. When Daddy'd get paid, he did her like he did me too later. He'd give her all the money he brought in. She was buying up pillows and pillow slips and sheets, towels. She was fixing it all together. Then, when she got what she wanted, she told me, she intended to leave Daddy and go with Sandy. And she kept this stuff at my house. Well, I knew what her plans was. But I think Betty Ward told Daddy because he knew everything she did. Everything. So, one day, here comes Millie in Sandy's car. She came to get the suitcases with all these towels. And here comes Daddy. Nobody expected him. He looked around until he found the suitcases in my boy's closet. And he took each one of them towels and just ripped it in half. And they had a knockdown, drag-out fight right in my house. Well, that was the last time they were together. When she got back to Grandma's house, she picked up Grandma's iron and threw it at Daddy. And it just missed him. Would have killed him if it didn't. She went to stay with Sandy after that. Now, Sandy wanted to marry her. Daddy was in the L.A. County Hospital for an operation on his head. Some polyps or something. Then, while Daddy was there, Sandy had a stroke, and they took him to the hospital, too. Same floor. I met Millie at the elevator, you know, and she told me she was hoping that Daddy would die so she'd get Junior. But Sandy wouldn't have Junior. He wouldn't even consider taking him. Still, she thought if she married Sandy and Daddy died, she'd get Junior. But Sandy died. That was poetic justice for you, I guess. Sandy died right there in the hospital. Grandma used to tell me how sorry she felt for Junior. Like one day, she told me she found him just sitting. She thought he was reading a book, but he was just sitting there, not making a sound, and the tears just rolled down his face. She asked him what was the matter. and he said he wished he had a mother and father and sisters and brothers like other children had. Junior was just little when he got interested in music. Mr. Parry was his first teacher, and I'm sure Junior remembers him. He was about 9 years old, and they were living in Watts, and Mr. Parry recognized immediately that he was very gifted. In fact, when they moved to Pedro, Mr. Parry was so impressed with his talent that he made the trip every weekend from L.A. to teach him. Grandma was proud of Junior's talent. Oh my, yes. She'd talk about it, too, to other people. She might not have bragged to him, but to anybody else who would listen, she would brag to high heaven about Junior's talent, because she knew in her mind that he was going to be very rich and famous when he got grown.
Junior kind of took the place of the children she lost, but she was never lovey-dovey, even with her own kids. He could do no wrong, Junior couldn't. She'd get out of patience and angry with him sometimes. He liked to aggravate her. He'd bait her. Instead of using a spoon, he'd slurp his soup out of the dish. He'd put his head way down. And Grandma firmly believed that when he grew up, he was going to be an outstanding musician. And she used to tell him.
She says, "You're going to be in society." She mm-hmm. says, "You're going to be in position where you'll need to know manners."
Mm-hmm.
And I remember him making that statement several times.
Mm-hmm.
"I'm going to be so famous that it won't make no difference if I have manners or not."